Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Friday, everybody. A lot of stuff to get to. Jam-packed show today. And we will be spending plenty of time talking about your Detroit Football Lions and their upcoming matchup this week with Tampa Bay. Don't worry, we're going to have plenty of time to get into that. But there's something we kind of really have no choice but to start with today that really, I guarantee, is going to be the biggest story to come out of week two, and we're only one game into the week. And that is that, well, we've got something kind of unprecedented, certainly in the modern era of football. Last night, Tua Tagovailoa suffered concussion number 4 in the last 2 years. And I've got to be entirely honest with you. I don't know if this is for sure going to end Tua Tagovailoa's football career, but I honestly, truly believe that it should be the end of his football career. 4 concussions in the span of 2 years. First one, week 3 of the 2022 season. I mean, you could tell on that play, he was just visibly shaken, like he was not there. He was just staggering and fell down. He was questionable to return in that game. Should have been pulled immediately, but they let him come back out in the second half. He was supposedly cleared through the concussion protocol. Oh, no, it's a back injury. Yeah, because back injuries make people just, like, stagger and just fall down like that. I don't think anybody was believing that. I don't know what neurological expert they called in on that, but you'll never convince me that that is not what that was. And apparently the Players Association felt the same way because they went and investigated after that too. Then week 4, Cincinnati Bengals, Thursday Night Football. You know what happened in that game. You saw it. Tua's head bounced off the turf. And again, it was pretty clear. Okay, that's obviously a concussion. 2 concussions in the span of 5 days. This stuff kills people, man. That certainly, almost anybody else, like, you're looking at that being it for your NFL career. Well, not for Tua, as it turns out. Then, week 16 of that year, against Green Bay, he played the entire game, but was back in concussion protocol on Monday. Back in concussion protocol, Teddy Bridgewater would ultimately start in week 17. 3 concussions in the span of 1 season. Certainly you hope that that would be the end of it. And he did indeed go through the entire 2023 season without suffering another one. Then, last night, another game against Buffalo. He'd thrown 3 picks on the evening. But finally it started to, at least begun to kind of start to turn things around. Seemingly he was leading the team downfield. Scrambled on a first down. And then it happened again. He's on the ground, hands around his face, and the training staff's out on the field. Ended up being ruled out of the rest of that game with a concussion. And this is now officially the 3rd confirmed concussion across basically 2 seasons of football. And you'll never convince me that that wasn't number 4. There's talk of him coming back in like 5 weeks. Why? Why even bother at this point? Why continue to subject yourself to this? Because if there's been 4 that we know of, probably means there's going to be a 5th at some point. It's just the way that this has gone, the way that the injury history having been what it was, if he keeps playing, this isn't going to be the last time that he's got to deal with this. To this point in this man's career, he's made $73 million, more than enough for his wife and 2 kids to never, ever have to worry about anything again, to ever have to worry about money in a day of their lives. Hell, 2 of his grandkids will probably never have to worry or work a day in their lives. At what point is it not worth it just to walk away from the sport? 4 concussions? I mean, would you like to actually be able to remember your kids' names when you get to, like, 50? At at what point does quality of life not become an issue? I'm sorry, but if I'm Tua's agent at this point, I'm absolutely telling him to walk away. If I'm the NFL, I'm very much on the phone with Stephen Ross, whoever it is that owns the Dolphins these days, and like, okay, you cannot put him back on the field. And calling the other 29, 31 owners, whatever it is, and telling them, do not sign this guy. At some point, because you know, if it's left up to him, I honestly feel like he's going to try to attempt the comeback in 5 weeks or whenever he's cleared from concussion protocol yet again. And sometimes you just kind of have to take that decision out of a guy's hands. Not that you want to do that. Certainly not that it's the optimal thing to do. But when a guy, if a guy clearly just does not care enough about his health and well-being to go out and get concussed 4 times in very serious fashion over the course of 2 seasons, over the course of 2 years, someone has to step in and be the adult in the room. I don't know. I like to think that somebody in the league office is willing to be that guy to take that step and say, like, all right, after last night, we can't seriously let this go on. At the very least, you can't play again this season. Somebody, someone with a brain has to go in there and say, no, not again. We're not doing this again. And I honestly don't know if there's anybody, whether it's at the league office, with the Dolphins, whoever, that's going to step up and say this. And that's concerning and kind of disappointing.
It is, because you're seeing the team say, yeah, we care about our players. We really want their safety, but we kind of also want a winning team. We want a good player. We've invested money in this guy before. And I get out there and shake it off. That's kind of what they want to say. But they want to, in front of the press, they're going to say, no, his health is the most important thing ever. But then you have to talk to Tua, and you have to say, you need to back away from the game. You need to back away from the game that you love, the game that you have known about your entire life.
It's basically been your entire life.
Your goal is to be in the NFL. Your goal is to win a Super Bowl. We want you to stop because you keep getting hurt. That's not going to be an easy sell.
It's not going to be an easy sell, but if he's still not getting it at that point, then someone has to be the adult in the room and make that decision. Because you don't ultimately want to be facing down a lawsuit or something later on, and he ends up having just massive CTE at some point. You don't want to be held responsible for something he does once his playing days are done as a result of the injuries he suffered, you know, mentally during his time in the game.
So, okay, let's say Miami, they take the high road, they do what they should do, and say, hey, we're not going to have you. We're your safety is too important. We're terminating your contract. Any lawyer, any of those leech lawyers, would be on Tua's side in a heartbeat to sue the Dolphins right back into the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, I'm not also saying here that you just back out of paying him any money that he's already owed and guaranteed. I mean, that's just stupid. But, I mean, teams cut and buy out players all the time across every sport, man. Like, there's a mechanism in place, and, you know, with the injury, the obvious medical history here, there's probably a way through insurance that they can get some chunk of that money back, if that's the thing that they're concerned about, that, you know, oh, we shelled out all this money for this guy. If that's what the concern is, there's ways, I'm pretty sure, to get that money back. I mean, we see it all the time, you know, in hockey, in baseball, yeah, and elsewhere. Like,
no, that's true.
So I don't think that is ultimately going to be a problem there. So you're not going to have a lawyer sue, because it's not like you're, you know, It's not like you're just saying, yeah, all about this money we owe you. Yeah, you're not getting any of that. Well, and even
the
they
NFL
have
to, wouldn't do that. Come on, Sean.
at this point, they have to know how terrible of a look that would be.
That would be really
like that would be the biggest PR nightmare. Yeah, we're telling this guy, yeah, he can't play anymore for his own safety, but also we're not paying you another dime. Like
they would mumble that part.
Yeah, I get that this league just is seemingly averse to bad PR. Like it feels like it can't be hurt by it because they've done so many things to shoot themselves in the foot over the years. But I don't think even they would be tone deaf enough to do that.
Well,
I really don't.
And here's a serious question: if they terminate his contract, they go to buy him out. He would have an argument. He's like, okay, I have performed as expected. And would the NFLPA, would the players' union side with the Dolphins, or would they sign with Tua? I guess we wouldn't know until we would talk to the union, but I just know as a union member, chances are very good. You want to make sure that your member gets taken care of as much as possible monetarily. So they probably,
certainly, but I don't think they're going to push him. I don't think the Players Association is going to push him to play again. You'll remember the first time this happened, and what they're still claiming to this day wasn't actually a concussion. Like, the players' union was fighting against him immediately coming back, and they wanted it looked further into. Like, we want that on record, you know, to examine and make sure that that wasn't, in fact, a concussion. Like, the Players Association, yeah, their biggest priority is getting people paid, without a doubt, but there are actually, they do address the player safety concerns, too. Like, it doesn't really do them any good to have a bunch of players that aren't able to function as adults once they leave the sport because of violent, multiple violent concussions.
Or there's a link between CTE and violent tendencies after they, you know, with their families after they play the game. But I mean, if Tua is saying, "I want to play, I need to play, I deserve to play," and the union said no, that's another lawsuit. That's another thing where those leech lawyers would be right there.
If you have an actual medical doctor that can back this up, though, and maybe it's something where the NFL is going to ultimately need to put a policy in place that, okay, you get two concussions in the span of whatever it is, you're not playing for a year or a year and a half or whatever. At that point, like, if it happens enough times in a certain span, you just can't play for X amount of time. And a lot of guys, but it's clearly not that long of a time because in this case, they're talking about him being back in 5 weeks. 5 weeks after suffering his fourth concussion in 2 years?
Yeah,
That is insane.
I mean, suspending a player for medical reasons, that's in there. But just to allow the Miami Dolphins to terminate and buy out his contract, that's a whole other animal.
Well, again,
should they be able to? Yes. But you see what I'm playing devil's advocate over here.
I get it, but I mean, there has to be a mechanism of some sort, whether it's, you know, basically a long-term injured reserve kind of thing, but you can't let that man see the field again. No. Clearly.
No, as the last thing you want him to get hit and die right on the field. That's bad for business.
Right? I mean, we've seen just how bad these violent hits can to mess people up. The guy who laid the hit on Tua last night, Damar Hamlin. Remember him?
Oh,
guy hit so hard, had a heart attack right on the field.
Yes, he did.
And
any comments from him? Because I'm assuming that he's probably feeling terrible about this.
Oh yeah, he knows. He's been there. He's been about as close to it as anybody has. And the fact that he's actually still able to come back and play football after that is nothing short of amazing in and of itself.
That was a miracle. That was good to see him back.
And that's another one where we can talk about, like, should he have come back after that? You know, that's really hard to say. But I mean, there's a guy. He's not set in the way that Tua is for life. He also, again, head injury, head trauma is a whole different animal from anything else.
Well, they're both pretty serious, but I think you hit the nail on the head. If a doctor says this guy should not be playing, or Hamlin, he's fine, he's passed all the protocol, he's passed every test, put him back on the field, that's one thing. And if the doctor's like, I've got $20 on him, no, he's in my fantasy league, put him in. Or, you know, a Tua, they're like, if the doctor comes out and says, in my medical opinion, this man should not be on a football field.
And there has to be someone in that. I know that normally that's just kind of how these things go. Like, they're going to, the doctors always err on the side of, hey, get back out there.
Yeah. Oh, you know. Oh, back in the day, yeah, I remember getting a line drive in the head. The one and only time I played pitcher's mound, and got a line drive right in the head. And, oh, you're fine. You're fine. Walk it off. You're fine.
And that's how they seriously treat this stuff a lot of the time. And that's kind of, I mean, we're starting to see now just how harmful that could be with guys. Like, we've seen what happens when these guys take too many hits to the head, whether it's football players, whether it's hockey players, as we well know a few goons who...
Boxers, yeah.
Boxers, absolutely, even more so. I mean, we've heard so many stories about, you know, in NHL enforcers, after their playing days are done, and all the hits that they took and the collisions they took and the things it did to their heads.
Yeah. To where they can't function. They can't see. If lights are too bright, it affects them. If flashing lights are, if they have sensory issues after.
Like, the brain ain't something to be messed with, man.
No.
And it's insane that, really, honestly, to me, it's insane that we're even having this conversation. This should just be a done thing. That man arguably shouldn't see a football field again ever, but certainly not again in 2024. And if the Dolphins are smart, like, I understand you had hopes of making the playoffs and everything else, and I don't even know who your backup is. Skylar Thompson, I'm pretty sure they just made that name up. But at some point, you got to put your people's well-being ahead of everything else.
Yes.
Ahead of on the field wins and losses and whatnot, and hopefully someone will come to their senses there. It's, you know, will they? It's the NFL. I really feel like I can't say that for sure. But it does concern me a great deal, the fact that they're even talking about him coming back, like, within like a little over a month. Really?
I don't know.
Five weeks. There's no way.
I mean, he would have to pass a lot of those tests, a lot of protocol. But I don't know. It doesn't. If I had four concussions doing my job, I've been done. I'm out. I'll go get a paper route or something.
If you manage to have four concussions doing just this, well, I mean, it actually explains a lot of your takes on this show, but...
Yeah. But this microphone is pretty hard, man.
You think all that protective padding would do a lot more than it actually does, I tell you. That's another thing. I mean, it really just shows you, like, I know a few guys are starting to wear those, the Guardian caps over their helmets, and...
They look like they're on Minecraft or something like that.
They do, and if these things are any indication, I'm not sure how much any of that's helping.
There's a lot of people, typically older people, that said that the equipment they have is too good. It makes people make bad choices because, oh, the equipment's going to save me. And in many ways, it has been said that, you know, as like with helmets, the way they are, that players have been known to weaponize them.
They have, and you'll notice that's why they've made such an effort to cut down on, you know, the head-to-head hits and the leading with the helmet and the targeting and everything else. Like, that's the big part of the reason why it is that they have made such an effort to crack down on that, is because they know that is, like, players are absolutely doing that and weaponizing and, you know, leading with their head, and you can't do that. Like, that, the helmet doesn't protect you from everything.
No, it doesn't.
Like,
talk to NHL players pre-helmet, and they'll say that, you know, it was a safer game. People weren't getting as hurt as often, and they might have an argument for this because, yeah,
they also weren't going as fast in those days.
They,
like,
weren't.
The speed, like, the players speed only gotten game, faster in recent
faster
years.
Faster and bigger. But I mean, at the same time, they're like, when you hit somebody, you know they're not wearing a helmet. You know, you police yourselves. Then all of a sudden, you have bigger shoulder pads and chest protectors, helmets, visors, mouth guards. And now you're like, I'm a bull in a china shop. I'm coming at you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, therein kind of lies the problem. Like, you might be, I think, kind of onto something here. Like, the equipment is so much that, you know, guys start to think they're invincible, and then very much realize that, oh, no, as it turns out...
Ouch, that really hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, the CTE would show that that's a lie.
CTE stands for can't take everything.
Yeah, you ain't wrong there, man. But no, it's going to be certainly interesting to see what decisions are made here and how the NFL, because I think the NFL ultimately has to take a look at its own policy and do something to keep this from happening, or at least reduce the idea, the possibility of this happening again. I still think someone should have been fired over concussion number one. Like, how that training staff didn't, you know, someone didn't get blown out in that will always confound me. Like, you can tell me it wasn't that all you want, but that hit, what I saw with my eyes and him then getting up and being all wobbly, oh no, he just hyperextended his back. Really?
Yeah.
Nobody on earth believes that. I'm sorry. We will get into the Lions in the next segment, I promise. There's a lot of local sports to do, and we will absolutely cover it all. Stick around, it's Happy Hour at Solid State Radio. It is Happy Hour, and I did promise we were going to talk about the Lions. I mean, we had to get to the Tua stuff. I mean, that is the biggest, as I said in the last segment, it's going to be like the biggest story to come out of week two, I think.
Yep.
But we do still have to talk about the Lions. We do have a game coming up on Sunday against the Tampa Bay Bucks, another team that they faced and, as you'll remember, beat in last year's NFL playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
Weird how that works, isn't it? So... this is a matchup that, ultimately, I do rather like the Lions in. Spoiler alert there. I do think that the Lions hold an advantage all the way around, ultimately, basically in everything. I mean, we know what your passing game is. Last year, Tampa Bay had a pass defense that struggled quite a bit. And, well, it's hard to say, really, what you can take from last week's game against a Commanders team that's rebuilding, has a rookie quarterback in Jaden Daniels. I mean, it's kind of hard to really make a lot of, you know, declarations based on that. But they did post the, apparently per Pro Football Focus, the 9th worst coverage grade of the week and the 21st ranked grade in the pass rush, for what it's worth. And this could work out really well for you because their entire secondary is hurt. Antoine Winfield is out with a foot or an ankle sprain. Bryce Hall's on the IR. He was not a starter, but he's definitely someone who got some, you know, decent playing time. Your starting corner, Zion McCollum, had a concussion. He was in full practice, however, on Thursday. Not sure if he's going to play. Josh Hayes, who is a depth defensive back, he suffered an ankle injury. He did not practice on Wednesday or Thursday. So you're missing a lot of guys that really are big players in that defense. You're still going to have Jamel Dean and Jordan Whitehead, but you're going to have to really lean on the depth here, and that is a place where I feel like Detroit could absolutely burn them. They also might be without Kalijah Kancey, he's been dealing with a calf injury. He didn't practice Wednesday or Thursday either. So this could really serve as another breakout game potentially for one Jameson Williams.
I mean, nice to see.
I would like to see that immensely. And I also fully do not expect that Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to be completely shut down as an option again. Like, you had last week, the Sun God was barely involved in the offense at all. Like, I think he got like a total of 13 yards on the night. I don't expect that to be the case 2 weeks in a row, but this is really setting itself up nicely for a breakout for J-Mo. The only thing that really I kind of have some concern with, Levante David. He's a guy I wanted in free agency last year, and he is the kind of guy that Jared Goff sometimes struggles up against. He's still, as a pass rusher, he's still pretty high up there. Like I said, I would not have at all minded having him opposite Hutch in free agency this last year. Unfortunately, it didn't end up working out that way. But he could still certainly be a threat, but your secondary is rather depleted, and I feel like that ultimately bodes pretty well for you. And as far as the rushing game goes, Tampa Bay has been pretty good, at least last year, at stopping the run. The first time last season those two teams played, Tampa basically shut your run game down. But to be fair, you didn't have Jahmyr Gibbs. David Montgomery left the game halfway through. But then in the postseason, it was a completely different story. Your Thunder and Lightning combo combined for 26 rushes and 114 yards with two touchdowns. Again, it looks like, to take the numbers at face value from last week, it looks like they struggle a bit, but that's misleading because Jaden Daniels rushed for the majority, about two-thirds of the Commanders' rushing yards last week. He had 88 of those of the 138 total that they had. Washington's running backs only had 50 rushing yards on 14 attempts. So I'm not reading too much into that because he is such a mobile QB and they didn't really do as much in the running game. But the Lions' running game is really, really good, as we established. Very much so last week. We saw just that overtime where David Montgomery's just like, you know what? Screw this. I'm just going to run the ball down your throat and force you to do something about it. And that ended up basically being what gave you the win. And then with Jahmyr Gibbs having the speed and on the outside and finding the holes where he needed to, this is going to be a tough run game for anybody to stop. They last week were 6th in yards per carry, 7th in rushing yards total, and a success rate of about 67%, which is first in all of the NFL last week. So, I mean, yeah, Tampa Bay has got really good at stopping the run, but a fully healthy Gibbs and Montgomery, I like our odds there. I like them quite a bit. Now, getting on to the offensive side of Tampa Bay, we saw what Baker Mayfield did last week.
Four touchdowns.
And again, strength of opponent is absolutely a factor here. Washington's not good. Washington arguably could be one of the worst teams in the NFL. How much can we really take away from what we saw last week? They were dead last in pass defense last year. So, to be fair, they were allowing an average 262 passing yards last season and a passer rating of 105.7, which, again, dead last in the NFL. So, okay, Mayfield's really good against absolute trash. How much can we really glean from what happened last week? And, I mean, he's got Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, guys who are, you would argue a couple years ago that was the elite running back or wideout duo in the NFL when Brady was there. And even Jalen McMillan, he had a nice 32-yard touchdown catch last week. So I'm really kind of torn on it just because, yeah, they have the potential to be that good, but also take it with a grain of salt because they faced the worst of the worst last week. Now, as far as stopping the pass, the Lions have suffered at that. We saw the way that Los Angeles was able to kind of dink and dunk their way down the field with Cooper Kupp last week.
Yeah.
Even with Puka Nacua basically being dead in the second quarter, they still couldn't figure out really how to stop Cooper Kupp from getting the ball. And I was amazed at times how often he was left open, how often he was just burning your secondary. Like, you have really no one else to worry about in this passing game. How is this guy open?
Right.
And I will give you credit that he is that good. Cooper Kupp is an elite wideout. No doubt about it. But he was also your only threat, so I feel like you should have been able to contain him a little more than he ultimately did. And here you've got to face not only, you know, Evans, but Chris Godwin as well. And Detroit was really good for what it's worth last week. It's why I understand why they did what they did. They were They're basically selling out the short game so they could prevent the deep ball, which is where normally you would be a threat here. And last year, Evans' depth of target was 14.4 yards, which would be like fifth highest in the NFL. So he's usually the guy that is that kind of deep threat for Tampa. So you could, I could see the Lions secondary being able to do something about that. But again, you've got so many other weapons that I don't know that the just giving up the short gains strategy is necessarily going to be enough to overcome here. This is honestly the one matchup that I'm really concerned about. I'm not worried about your offense at all. Your offense can do pretty much whatever it wants to do. But I do worry that this secondary is going to struggle a bit against Mayfield and company. Now, when it comes to stopping the run, no one's better than the Lions. At least last year, nobody was better. Like, they're off to a pretty good start again with that this year. You didn't see a whole lot in they were eighth in yards per carry. Like, they were doing about as well as you could have asked them to. Like, the run game wasn't a whole great deal of a factor last week for the Rams. And the Bucs can't run the ball at all. They certainly didn't last year. They switched out offensive coordinators in the offseason, and they're trying to do more of emphasizing the run, but didn't work out that way last week. In fact, the Commanders posted the highest stuff rate in the NFL last week. 36.7% of rushes for Tampa Bay either didn't gain a yard or actually lost yardage.
Yikes.
The run game there failed more than any other in the NFL last week. So this is very much a matchup that works out well for you. And last week, the thing that also that I rather like here is that you're that DJ Reader. I feel like he's coming off an injury, but he's going to be a hell of a run stuffer for this team. And I feel like that gives you a massive advantage in and of itself. So already, all the odds here say, and again, it's obviously not a team to look past, and there are causes for concern, certainly, but I like my odds a lot if I'm the Lions going into this matchup. Again, as long as you manage to prevent Evans from breaking out offensively and getting the deep ball, I feel like you should be able to do this. I feel real good about it. And if you can keep that under control, I feel like you've got a W here for sure. And the only things that may be a little bit concerning, there's a few injuries. Penei Sewell is questionable for this week, and that certainly is disappointing. Marcus Davenport is also doubtful for the week with a groin injury, so you're going to be losing your other edge rusher. That might be an issue. Like, you're not going to be able to get to Mayfield as quick. But also, they're not saying for sure that he's not going to play. He's just listed as doubtful. They're leaving that window open for him to potentially be able to go, and I'm hoping he can, because that is the one place where you really can't afford to lose any help there, I would think. But other than that, I feel like it's a matchup that very much favors the Lions ultimately. And I would expect, well, I don't want to spoil anything for the picks, but spoiler alert, I think we're going to be looking at a 2-0 team. We got to hit a break. It is happy hour at Salt State Radio. All right, so clearly we don't need to spend much, if any, in the way of time on Michigan or Michigan State this week.
No.
This is just the week of the cupcake games. They're playing, Michigan is going and playing Arkansas State, a school that I completely forgot until this moment actually exists.
I had to ask you if those were the Razorbacks. No, apparently that's just Arkansas.
That team who squeaked out a victory over Central Arkansas, which, that's a school?
Central Arkansas?
Yeah.
Okay.
In week one, and against Tulsa in week two, for whatever these things are worth, which is really not anything. Don't care. Michigan's favored by 22. I mean, we'll do it college picks later, but I don't feel like we really need to break down this team ahead of this game, nor do we need to for Michigan State against Prairie View? You made that school up. ESPN's messing with me. I'm convinced of this. I have never heard of this school in my life. I don't think they're a real school that exists.
Wow. Yeah. Arkansas State Red Wolves. Is that racist? It sounds like it's racist.
No, I'm pretty sure it's not. Prairie View. I'm still
Prairie View.
Is this like a high school? This is a high school team they're playing. That's what's going on here. It's like a Bishop Sycamore kind of thing.
No, it sounds like a trashy mobile home park.
They literally just set up a school at like one of those big old mobile home trailer parks and fielded a team out of that.
Yep.
That would explain a lot. They apparently lost in week one to something called Texas Southern and beat Northwestern State last week, which, again, there's a Northwestern State. Wasn't aware of that, but okay, we'll go with it. Wow. So obviously we're not going to spend really any time on that because what's there really to talk about with two cupcake games for our home schools this week?
No, none.
I do, however, want to talk about the Tigers.
Okay.
And not just because we're, you know, working with a company that runs the Tigers games, which you can hear for free all season long on the Thumb's Greatest Hits 97.7 WTGV, but because they're actually still somehow a playoff contender.
Since
we last talked on Monday, the Tigers took 2 out of 3 from the Rockies. Quite frankly, should have been 3.
Yeah.
How did you let that happen in the last game of that series? Especially because the first two were just absolute blowout games. They put up 11 runs in the first one. I'm like, come on, can we save some of that offense for later in the week? That'd be great.
Yeah.
But we're sitting now at a point where this team, as it stands, is going and hosting the Baltimore Orioles, who, you may be aware, are a very good baseball team, for 3 games at home this weekend.
Yep.
But they are currently in the standings, 3.5, essentially 4, because you don't have the tiebreaker. Minnesota has a tiebreaker on you, so you need to leapfrog them outright. There is no, you know, game 163 if you finish that way. Minnesota's going to get the pick. So you're basically 4 games back on Minnesota, a team that seems desperately committed to absolute free fall. They right now have an 87% chance of making the postseason. But if they keep doing what they've been doing and Rocco Baldelli keeps managing the way he does, you could really see yourself playing yourself out of that real quick. And, man, I would have felt a lot more comfortable with this had they pulled off the 3rd win against Colorado. I would have felt a lot better had that been the case. But, unfortunately, you wasted a pretty solid start from Tarek Skubal. So you really didn't end up getting to really pull ahead closer into that race. If you manage to actually maintain pace this weekend with Minnesota going to Cincinnati to take on a mediocre at best Reds team, if you can somehow keep pace through this weekend, I like your odds from here. Because Minnesota has to go on the road and play Cleveland and Boston in quick succession. Not to mention, they'll have to play the Orioles as well. That is 10 games that are entirely losable here. But the thing is, at this point, you can't afford to lose any more ground. Like, if Minnesota even plays, like, 500 ball the rest of the way, like, you're going to have to go 4 games above 500 just to catch up. Like, you really need Minnesota to absolutely tank here going forward. They've got left in their season 16 games. And if they do any better than 8-8, your season's over. Because even with the Tigers being on the current stretch they are, and keep in mind they've got a game in hand here too, I don't really see going 4 games over 500 the rest of the way as being a real possibility for this team, even with the kind of garbage schedule that they have to face. Like, that's asking, I think, more than this team can deliver. But if you can maintain this weekend, and it's going to be tough because you're going up against some really good starting pitching for Baltimore. Zach Eflin's having himself a pretty decent season. He's gone 5-1. He's got a 2.37 ERA in 6 starts this season. He's not exactly going to be easy to face. And he got way better once he got traded from Tampa to Baltimore. And then you've got to face Corbin Burns on Saturday. And there's a guy, got an all-star nod this year, 318 ERA. A whip of something like 1.14. That's a scary prospect, having to face those two dudes. Sunday, you've got Cade Povich, who's not nearly as good, is also a rookie, up against Keeter Montero, who, you know, last we checked on him, complete game shutout. He is proving to be very much a nice piece in that rotation. But thing that worries me is that you're facing two all-star caliber pitchers this weekend on Friday and Saturday, and you're throwing out, they don't even have a starting pitcher listed for either game. Like, Bo Breeski is quote-unquote starting today, which means it's going to be a bullpen game, basically. And MLB doesn't even have a starting pitcher, a pitcher at all, listed for tomorrow night's matchup. So that's a little bit concerning. But somehow, I don't know how this keeps happening, but you're getting ridiculously good performances out of your pitchers lately. Like, you're getting quite a bit out of the bullpen. You know, Jason Foley blowing the game yesterday aside, you're getting some really good showings out of Montero and Ty Madden and other guys that, like, you wouldn't be able to identify in a police lineup. Somehow it's working. I don't know how it's working, but it is. And the Tigers really got to hope it keeps working, because they are in a spot right now where they can't afford to lose any winnable games. Like, you're absolutely, when you go to face KC next week, you have to sweep that series. Like, you kind of put yourself in a position where you have to really beat up. You couldn't really honestly afford to lose that game to Colorado, if I'm being entirely honest with you. But you've got to go in there and you have to sweep the White Sox. That's an absolute, you know, there's no way around that. You have to play Baltimore another series after this. You got to go in there and sweep KC. You got to go in there and sweep Tampa Bay. You can't afford to lose a series from here on out. It's basically where you're at. Like, you almost have to go and take two out of every three that you play if you're going to have a chance of overtaking Minnesota. And you're kind of really, in a lot of ways, counting on Minnesota to just screw this up royally and just completely go dumpster fire, which I believe, truly, that is in the realm of possibility of things that could actually happen. I could see it. I could absolutely see it. It very much is. It wouldn't shock me if it went down that way. But that's going to require some work on your part. Like, you're just kind of on the edge of being able to control your destiny such as it is, and you're going to have to do a lot of winning here in this next week to earn the right to do that, to control your destiny when it gets to the Chicago series. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to do it. I am doubtful, but yet hopeful right now at the same time. Show me you can get it done against the O's, and we can come back here Monday and have a conversation about it and feel a lot better about things. There is one more quick Tigers thing I want to touch on that I know we got to hit a break. We got to get to the picks. But something interesting I happened to come across amongst the Tigers rumors and speculation and things for this offseason. There is a free agent pending at third base that I would not mind having. Not going to lie to you. And the Tigers have been named a top landing spot for this fella, a two-time All-Star, who comes from a team that your manager, A.J. Hinch, is very familiar with. Alex Bregman. He's been with the Houston Astros his entire career. And Bleacher Report Zach Reimer believes that your Detroit Tigers could make a run at Bregman, listing them as the fourth most likely destination. The quote on this: if the Astros don't keep Bregman, what are the chances he finds a little taste of Houston and Detroit instead? If the Tigers decide to make a run at Bregman, Hinch is there likely to be the point man in the recruiting effort. As you remember, Hinch was his manager over there when he was winning World Series and doing All-Star-like things. So they are listed. The funny thing about this is they are listed as more likely of a possibility than the Astros are. Like, you're more likely to sign this guy than Houston is to re-sign him, according to Bleacher Report, for whatever it might be worth. Of course, there's an unavoidable negative connotation that comes with bringing all this up, but the point is that the Tigers decide to make a run at Bregman. Hinch is likely to be is there to be the point man in the recruiting effort, and the Tigers should indeed want to make a run at Bregman, if for no other reason than he fits them perfectly from both on paper and timing perspectives. Third base is a clear weak spot in Detroit. I mean, Jace Young and Matt Vierling are getting most of the starts there, as we know, and you could certainly stand to upgrade, although I feel like you'll find somewhere to put Matt Vierling's bat. Like, if he's hitting good enough, and this is kind of a point I made, because I am apparently not necessarily the majority of Tigers fans on this, that I want him here. I don't care that supposedly you have Jace Young as your guy of the future. He's not the guy you're now, necessarily. And we don't know if he's going to be swinging a hot enough bat in the long term for him to say, yep, you're the guy. We're not getting any competition at that position for you. I don't agree with that necessarily. And there's a lot of people that don't want him, much like didn't want Carlos Correa. Like, there's people who are like, well, good thing we didn't go and sign him. He's hitting a .309 clip this season. You'd rather have Javi Baez and his robust .184 average? Yeah, thank God you don't have that black hole in your lineup, that's for sure. Like, and I know that, you know, there is a certain segment of the fan base that, well, let the youngsters just battle for the spot. These guys are overpaid. Like, are they overpaid, though? Let's be honest here. At the time that you were free agent, as far as the youngster thing goes, at the point in time where Correa and Baez were free agents, no, there were no youngsters to ballot out. Who'd you have? Ryan Kreidler? Zach Short? He of the career, like, .147 batting average? Who did you really have here that was going to stick in that position? Zach McKinstry? There wasn't anybody. There was no one who could actually play the position and hit above their own weight. And I am of the opinion always that I would rather have too many options at a premium, especially at a premium defensive position, than not enough. Like, if one of those backup guys is swinging a hot enough bat, like had we signed Correa instead of Baez, which I still wish they would have. I don't care how much money. Like, you're paying $20 to $35 million for an elite shortstop now. That's how it goes, unless you just happen to draft one. That's just the going rate, man. There's no way around that. But say you did that, and say you still had a Trey Sweeney forcing his way into the lineup. You know what a good manager is going to do? A good manager is going to find a way to get that bat into the lineup, whatever position he's got to play. Like, well, guess you're playing second today. Well, someone's going to have to, you know, put in a DH. Like, don't care. You get the bats in the lineup, and I trust AJ Hinch as a manager enough to be like, you know what? We're going to find a way to get Trey Sweeney's bat into the lineup regardless of who else is playing middle infield. Doesn't matter. We're going to find a way because we can't not have that bat in the order. Better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it. As we see right now, when half this season you could have really used a bat before the trade deadline and didn't, well, get it. So yeah, if the Tigers were after this guy, I am 110% here for it. Make it happen. Bring him home. Get AJ Hinch working his magic on that. We got to hit a break. The picks are next. Stick around. It is that time of the week again. It is Friday. It's the last segment of the show, which means traditionally that it's time for the picks. And obviously, Adam and I are back here. Adam trying to defend his title as he won the first week.
That's right.
I believe it's the first time in the history of this show that you've ever won the picks.
Nah, that's not true. I won a couple times last season.
Whatever you say. Whatever helps you sleep at night. I'm pretty sure that's a lie, but whatever. But joining us on the phone live from Harry Reid International Airport is one Drew Duffney.
Hey, everybody. Live and thriving. We're sitting down at the Wheel of Fortune machine. We'll come.
Of course there's a casino at the airport. Why wouldn't there be?
Well, yeah, there's like five gates here. So
how did Vegas treat you?
If anything is going to be lucky, Adam won last week. This is my week to win. So if anything's lucky, it's going to be us getting ready to get on a plane on Friday the 13th. So I ought to be able to pick some winners today.
And Drew is a very superstitious person. I'm actually surprised this is happening. What,
they say it's unlucky to be superstitious.
Wait, is that a thing? I've never heard that.
And as if they're trying to smuggle the Caesar's Palace drinking water through TSA security, it's like 8 ounces that got us screened. My brother just realized that he thought he lost his identification in an international airport in another state. So, he found it. He found it, so we're good. Let's put some money in there.
Well, that's a relief at least.
Yeah, so anyway, let's get on with this party because I'm not quite sure how many times I'm going to get interrupted or potentially arrested. I'll send you some pictures of that.
Try not to get arrested. It would probably not be very good for the show or for your show, for that matter, if you get arrested.
Can I tell you, law enforcement out here? Week.
Yeah, that's all we need. So let's get into it then. We start with your Sunday 1 o'clock games. Well, that one's going to be a disaster. How about the Cleveland Browns and the Jacksonville Jaguars, which will probably also be a disaster, just in a different way, as Cleveland is coming off getting embarrassed by the New England Patriots, a team that was supposed to be awful this year, and that did not quite work out that way. We'll start with Adam Harahawk on the pick.
Jacksonville is favored by 3, but...
Yes, they are.
This is not my upset special because it's only by 3, but I am going to go with the Browns. I'm taking the Browns on this one.
Drew Duffney on the pick.
You know, my opinion hasn't changed. Like I said, this is good luck coming live from Las Vegas. Jacksonville hasn't been the same ever since Tony Dungy quit coaching, so I'm going to say Browns all the way to the Super Bowl.
Ooh. Well, here he goes again. And I hate to tell you this, Cleveland's going to be 0-2 at the end of this thing for a reason, quite frankly. That was an absolute debacle last week, and I don't think you can honestly say that this is the best defense in the NFL anymore. Certainly didn't look like it last week. Give me the Jags. Up next, the Jets head to Tennessee to take on the Titans. The Jets, as you'll remember last week, got shellacked by San Fran, and Aaron Rodgers did not have the best return that he could have possibly hoped for, and Tennessee ends up losing to a Chicago team that really didn't do a whole lot right either. We'll start with Drew.
I'm going to say Tennessee's going to do it. They got some serious rain down there, and there's nothing going to, you know, get your cleats dug into the mud like a whole pile of rain, so give me Tennessee for the win.
Adam Harahawk.
Not me. I picked Tennessee last time, and they burned me. I'm scorned. I feel bad. I feel jilted. So give me J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets.
You done messed up, Aaron. Give me the Titans.
Yeah.
Up next, San Fran heading to Minnesota to take on the Vikings. Playing with 100% less Kirk Cousins and 100% less J.J. McCarthy. But somehow Sam Darnold managed to acquit himself just fine in the last week's first start. That said, San Fran's only a 4.5-point favorite, which is the only reason I'm even doing this matchup. Like, this feels like it should be a lot further apart than it is, but we're going to start with Adam Harahawk.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and go with the Niners. 5.5 on my screen, for what it's worth. So just to make things a little extra saucy, I'm going to, the over-under is 46.5. I'm going to take the under.
You and your over-under nonsense.
Yep.
You're just sour about it because you owe me like a dollar from last week, Seanster.
Shut up, Drew. Actually, no, Chuck, you made your pick, but.
Yeah, it was definitely the under. But
yes, it was.
We met 6 girls, walked into the bar, and in the honor of a favorite band of Sessions, Attaboy.
Yeah.
The one had on her shirt the Squirrel Whisperer. And as far as Attaboy is concerned, their code name for women or girls is squirrels. And so all these women were just there to party, and they come to visit, and Joe and I were there, and we got pictures, and it was a party. So I, once again, think there's going to be pillaging and plundering. Give me the Vikings.
I'm taking San Fran, and I'm taking the points here. I have no idea how that related to anything. So I'm just going to say, give me San Fran the points, and we'll move on.
It's just what you say. Yes, Drew, you're right.
Absolutely.
Well, all the girls were from Minnesota. I didn't think to include that. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. See, that might have made that story make a little bit more sense, Duffy.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah,
oh,
that's what live radio's all about. I gotta fill in once in a while.
One of the girls is dating a running back for the Vikings. Anyway, moving on.
Anyway, it's not really pertinent to the story or anything, but yeah. Up next. I'm only picking this game because I really just want to make fun of both of these teams. The Washington Commanders and the New York Football Giants.
Oh, my God.
Washington is favored by 1.5 points. Both these teams are trash. Adam Harahawk.
Oh, you know what? Let's throw caution to the wind. Give me the G-Men.
Drew.
I didn't mean for that.
Did I hear Washington Commanders?
Washington Commanders versus New York Giants. Commanders at home.
It's going to be the Commanders. I know you guys thought that was a trash team all last year, but I'm holding out. I mean, I was a Lions fan forever, and look at what they're doing this year. I'm just keeping the faith.
They were a trash team last year, and you know what? They're a trash-er team this year. But luckily for them, the Giants might be even more trash. Give me the Commanders.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know, right? Up next, we have... Oh, let's go ahead and do the Matt Stafford and the stupid Rams going to Arizona to take on Kyler Murray, who suddenly, somehow, like... almost looked like a competent NFL quarterback again. Threw a touchdown last week, no picks, 162 yards, went 21 for 31, and led the team in rushing last week as well, taking on Matt Stafford, who, while he picked apart the Lions secondary, one 5-yard gain at a time, could not get it done against your Detroit Lions. Drew Duffy on the pick.
I will take the Cardinals for the win. I didn't vote for Stafford last week, and I'm not doing it this week.
Adam.
I will vote for Stafford this week. Give me Kelly Stafford's husband and the Rams.
Yeah, I'm not taking the stupid Rams in this one. Give me the Cards. Because it would just be hilarious to me to see him start off 0-2 this year and have Kelly start freaking out about things. Everybody.
Man, how poorly the audience treated her in Arizona.
Right. Did they boo her there too, I wonder? Or will they? We'll find out.
I want to say she didn't come to this game. Oh, do they boo her here also? Yeah, we'd like to see. Bunch of Cardinals swarming our family when they get out of the car.
Exactly. So, up next we have the Pittsburgh Steelers, who somehow find themselves with Justin Fields as their starter. It was not the plan, but it just kind of worked out that way. Didn't get a single offensive touchdown last week, but Chris Boswell kicked about 1 million field goals and they ended up winning. Coming in to face the Broncos, but the Steelers are only favored by 2.5. So we're going to do it anyway. Adam on the pick.
I guess this is just going to be the underdog Sunday for Adam. Go ahead and give me the Broncos.
Drew.
Two regularly cooler climate teams in an unseasonably warm summer. I guess I will take the Steelers.
That's the reason, by the way, I picked this game is because I was hoping Adam would do something stupid like that, and then I could come in and say, give me the Steelers.
You can tell Drew is leaving Vegas. He's thinking of all the variables that it takes to decide a game.
I've got it out of my mind.
This man's taking a quarterback who threw for 138 yards last week and 2 picks, no touchdowns, except for the one he ran in, but they still lost. Yeah, give me the Steelers all day. Thank you for the easy points there, Adam. Up next, the Bengals trying to get this thing back on track and doing it against Kansas City. In Kansas City. Can they restore their, get back to the driver's seat for home field advantage in the AFC? Well, let's find out. Adam Harahawk on the pick.
Absolutely not. Chiefs all the way. And give me the points. Those sweet, succulent points.
Drew.
Man, it's tough because I know they got the support of all the Swifties. But I just feel like the whole team's going to walk out there like a bunch of Egyptians. Give me the Bengals.
All right, and you know what? Give me KC because I ain't losing this matchup. Finally, the game we all really care about, your Detroit Football Lions and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at Ford Field on Sunday. We'll start with Adam on the pick.
Detroit Lions 35, Buccaneers 20.
25-20, eh?
35-20. Yes.
Drew?
It is going to be 24-20. I think it's going to be a closer game than what you think it's going to be. Of course, Lions favor.
I don't think it's going to be a particularly close game because for all the reasons I ran down earlier, you have the superior offense. Tampa Bay, not all that great at stopping the pass, and they can't run the ball at all. Give me the Lions 37, Tampa Bay 17.
I'm taking the under on that again this week. You and your high scoring games.
What is the over under on that anyway? Do you know?
The over 54. On my screen is.
Well, your call would have been 54.
Oh, you're just taking the over under on what I actually did there?
Yeah.
Can I say the actual over under on.
51.5.
51.5. I'm taking the over, clearly.
Yeah, and I am as well.
All right, and Drew is taking the under.
Yes.
There's the picks. Real quick before we go, a couple apologies in our weekly attempt to cleanse our souls. We'd like to apologize to Liv Tyler, Space Hog, the Toadies, and the entire staff of the Harry Reid International Airport. We're sorry. On that note, a full hour of local original music comes your way next on a little show we like to call Sessions. All being well, see you tomorrow night at Birthday Bash.